There we go. Uh-oh, it just went to second one.
Yeah. We're going back on record.
One thing that we're trying to explore and test, because there's quite a few persons out there that believe overall government housing policy contributed to the crisis. And they point to not only affordable housing goals, CRA, encouragement by the federal government to relax lending standards, HUD's efforts to get borrowers to relax lending standards on the front line. What do you think about the role of the government's housing policies in creating the bubble or adding to it or contributing to it?
I'm trying to figure out. I know what I think. I'm trying to figure out how to say it. Mm-hmm. That thing I just showed you, mm-hmm. right, shows you that if all you had, if you just had taken out all of the obvious madness, mm-hmm. the situation, because that's national. It's all the loans everywhere, would have been no worse than the worst period, that which was the '86 period, right? So you would have downsized this whole conversation by a pretty substantial amount by just not monkeying around, which has nothing to do with government policy. It has to do with not monkeying around. Okay. Mm-hmm. A screen for the monkeying around, which is why I'm trying to figure out how to say this the right way, was, you know, this notion of let's put make the number 69% or 70 or 71, or, you know, we should put everybody in a house, whether whatever. And I don't have a problem with that, but it's a self correcting issue, because the other part of that sentence would be everybody in a house that could continue to live in it because he can afford it. The worst thing you can do to anybody, you know, $2,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money unless you're really lower middle income, and then it took you 15 years to save it up. So he may only put 3% down, like in an FHA loan. But to him, that's all the money in the world. You know, the whole point of FHA was to make sure that you didn't create a circumstance where that person couldn't really stay in the house. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what was constantly being used as a smokescreen, and you can see it in the dialogue, you can get all of this stuff. It's you could lay hands on it. Is this idea of, well, you know, we don't need, you know, the Countrywide went on a campaign that we don't need any down payments. You know, the only reason that was even listened to was this notion, well, then we're going to put more people in houses, okay? I truly believe in housing. I truly believe in the glue that housing creates. But I truly don't believe that everybody can afford a house unless the government consciously makes a decision to subsidize that. In other words, if the government wants to consciously make a decision to make the housing, the home ownership level 75%, it can do it, right? Because mm-hmm. and it'll do it in a way where it spends taxpayer money but doesn't create a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to, in effect, push it. But I honestly don't think that was really the issue. I think that mm-hmm. chart shows you that if you just took the madness away, which had nothing to do with the government's policy, that though, think about it, the non-conforming loans had nothing to do with government policy.
Well, however, if would you be surprised if during this period between 2003 and 2007 that the GSAs were buying the product?
Yeah, but were they really buying it because of the government housing policy, or were they really buying it because they needed the volume in order to make the earnings?
Okay.
I don't know the truth. I wasn't in the meetings, but the answer is, were they buying all the AAAs? It's like I've in my career been involved in 9 banks. I'm this weird creature who turned around 8. Bill Seidman asked me to be Daniel LeBois asked me to be the liquidator of the biggest American Savings, and Bill Seidman asked me to run the most complicated, Franklin and mm-hmm. Arkansas. CRA could be a pain in the neck, but you know what? It always, in my view, it always did much more good than it did anything. We did a lot CRA made a big difference in communities. Because remember, CRA, when done well, wasn't just like, at least, you know, the good CRA guys, the regulators, made sure that, you know, I told you, you know, what did you really do if you bought an FHA loan? Did FHA really need you? No. What have you really done? Somebody else would have bought the Ginnie Mae. When you were doing CRA, it was you were really putting money into communities in ways that really stabilized the communities and made a difference. Which didn't mean you were just building houses. You had to make sure there were businesses. You had to make sure there were jobs, right? I'm telling you, CRA really works. It wasn't. It was not a problem. All right. Yeah. Housing goals. Mind you, I think the one thing that comes out of this is trying to create a housing goal. We're going to have 69% home ownership. The danger is that it gives air cover to all of this kind of madness that had nothing to do with the housing goal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That's a great state.
You know, we can get to 69 if you want, but the guy who should do it is the government, because somebody is going to have to take a risk, because you have to enfranchise people who would not be enfranchised under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. But that, it was that line, which, by the way, I don't believe was in truth what people were doing. I think they were making money, not trying to But in other words, it was under that umbrella that a lot of these abuses were being tolerated.
And when you say we can do it, but the government's got to do it, are you meaning through FHA?
Yes, FHA is the wonder. I mean, think about it. FHA has been around for a long time, right? And it always was charged with doing the undoable. You know, getting people in houses who otherwise wouldn't do it. Taking less down payment. Taking more risk. You know? And prior to this cycle, and again, it's in these same years. That's what you have to remember. The thing you're investigating isn't 35 years. It's this little narrow period. Mm-hmm. Look at where FHA's losses come from. Look at the years in which their losses is coming from.
And by narrow period, you're pointing to 02 to 08 or so?
Yeah, 02 to 08, yeah. If you look at it, you're not talking about the 35, 40 years. You're talking about this period, right? FHA, of course, gets pulled into the pot. Mm-hmm. So they're the majority of their losses come from the years when, in effect, Fannie and Freddie shut down, and the same guys are trying to figure. They can't bag the RMBS market anymore. They can't give it to Fannie and Freddie. So who becomes the weak sister? Not because they're bad guys, but because they're the only one left standing, and they can't defend. They don't have the systems. They were not built to defend against all these guys. Mm-hmm. So those 07, 08 book. When FHA goes like this, their volumes go spike high, and in 07 and 08, that book tends to carry the weight of all of the baloney that used to go, you know, these guys don't give up easy. They go find someplace else. But prior to that period, FHA is this magic organization. It's always being given an undoable job. It always does it.
And it also always does it well.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? Okay, so...
With higher standards.
Without losing money.
With higher standards.
I think we have gotten today a notion that we write into the book called The Madness.
And I just want to follow this right now. So with the...
Tommy, let me...
Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, you said it just took the madness away, and you never finished that thought.
If you just took the madness away... You would have had another housing decline like we had, but it would not be this catastrophe. That's what these numbers show you. I mean, you know what they're showing you is that, guys, if you took out $1.3 trillion of all day, if you took out $1.2 trillion of subprime, if you took out the Fannie Mae loans. With the lower criteria when they started to drink the Kool-Aid, even in their own portfolio, just take those things out of the mix. Take those out of the mix as losses or any way you want to take them out.
Okay.
And then look at everything else.
It would have been a housing decline, but it wouldn't be what we got. We had housing declines. We're used to it. You know, it's sort of the way the nature of the system works, all right? But it wouldn't be this. And it certainly wasn't CRA.
All right. Is this because of the velocity of these mortgages through the system and RMBS, CDOs, and others? Is that what you're saying?
That's part of it, but it's more than... You have this layer cake of things that was going on. You had the corruption at the bottom,
yes.
Right? You had the breakdown of the standards, which first come in the RMBS because they first occur in RMBS and then they spread to the prime and the agencies. And the reason they actually happen is because you break down the checks and balances that normally would have stopped them, one of which is the CDO, which takes away the last of the defenses on who's protecting the bondholder, if you want to say it. What people didn't understand is that in protecting the bondholder, you were in effect protecting the homeowner from being in a... No homeowner wanted to enter into a house he couldn't own. Nobody wants to get... You have no idea what it's like when you talk to these people. You have to know that, you know, the RTC... was an unfortunate time, okay, but it wasn't like now. This is a tragedy of human. These are people. These are not companies. These are not banks. These are not nothing. These are individuals. You know what it's like when you got millions of people you're foreclosing on? These are human beings with families,
yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is different than anything else. So... In protecting the bondholder, in a sense, you were protecting the consumer because you weren't putting humans in houses that you were going to try and take them out of. Granted, a bewildering number of these guys agreed to lie about their income, but what, you know, my sense is that in almost every case, the guy didn't walk in and say, gee, I'm going to lie about my income today. He was coached. Somebody... He didn't walk in and say, gee, I'm going to lie. I'm going to get a house bigger than I can really afford today because these guys are so bozo that I'm going to tell them I make twice as much money and they're going to believe me. Phooey.
And to focus on the GSEs and the FHA, I think we should we separate the two? Because the FHA had standards. There was a whole long process that you had to go right. through to get an approval on the loan.
Yeah, they knew that they were Mission Impossible, and they always built a system to attempt to succeed at Mission Impossible.
And so, it took days or weeks
right.
to get approved on an FHA
yeah.
loan, whereas with a subprime loan, it could be done in
a day.
A day.
Yeah, but again,
so they were going around the government, around the FHA, to fulfill the needs of these low income families that if they had followed the FHA standards.
Yeah, but one of two things: all of these people would not have gotten in the houses.
Right.
Right, and somebody would have had to make a decision that either I want to make sure these people have houses, and FHA. Oh, by the way, the Hispanic neighborhoods in LA are not getting. Are not being enfranchised, right? Go figure it out, right? Tell me what you need us to do, and then we'll decide whether we're going to give you the money. I mean, it's really what would have happened in the normal order of mm-hmm. things, right? The political pressure to enfranchise a group would ultimately have been heard and met or not, right? Not that now we went running around trying to find what, but you know, in my own world, I'm involved in a health system. I truly believe, I can't prove it to you, but I believe that this stuff was sold, not bought. Because I find clusters, I find towns, I find groups like healthcare workers. Where it's amazing, everybody's got one of these dopey loans, including the doctors. How would you like to have an operation where the aides, the nurses, the guy applying the oxygen, and the doctor are all worrying about having their houses foreclosed because every one of them has got a goofball loan? It's hard for me to believe that's accidental. I think this stuff is targeted. I mean, my I can't prove it, but I've never tried forensically to try, but I believe this stuff was more sold than bought. Hmm. I believe perfectly rational people didn't wake up one morning and say, oh, gee, I want to go have a neg-am loan so I can wind up owing more money than the value of the house, even if the house doesn't go down in value.
Oh, hell, I'm going to flip it if it gets tough because the prices are going up.
See, but I don't think people think that way in and of themselves. I think there is a, when we look at loans, one thing we do ask ourselves is, who is this guy? Is this guy whose predilection is to think of a house as shelter, or does he think this is another kind of automated teller machine where he can, every time he goes up, he takes the cash out, and if it goes down, he hands us back the key, right? We'd rather not get involved with the latter. We like the former, okay? I don't think there's that many of the latter, to be honest with you. I think most people were more in this, and they had come to believe a house was a great investment, which it generally is, having nothing to do with this five-year tragedy. You know, for the whole history of the United States, housing increases higher than GDP. So if you buy a house, it's eventually going to turn out to be a really good investment. That's always been true. It's just in this crazy period. So it's all right to think of a house as an investment. It's all right to decide with your wife to stretch a little to get a bigger house because, you know, you'd rather have a bigger house. And, oh, by the way, you're probably going to financially be very happy you made the decision. That wasn't a bad idea. It was only when it was corrupted into some other kind of madness.
Mr. Ranieri, I know you have another meeting to get to, and I don't want you to be late. Is there any particular topic that you wish folks would focus on in the crisis that hasn't been focused on? I mean, there's a lot been written about the crisis, a lot of academic papers, a lot of mainstream books about the crisis. Is there some part of the crisis that you think just hasn't received the appropriate attention?
Oh, I taught the second mortgage thing, which mm-hmm. even then the bill didn't get, and if we don't fix, then nothing will work because we didn't do anything. We can go right back and do it all over again. So I would tell you one way or the other that we have to fix that. And I would tell you the one that doesn't get, it doesn't, everybody knows it, but it's not getting attention. I'm one of the founders, but I will tell you, if you finance off a balance sheet and nobody's responsible for anything, so reps and warranties don't count, you know, in a really major way, then it can't work. It's not a matter of focus, it's just a matter of fact. Because I told you, the difference between securitization and everything else is securitization is financed through the asset itself. So if you can't determine the value of the asset, because everybody can lie and it makes no difference and nobody is a fiduciary for anybody anywhere, then you got to go put it back on balance sheet because at least the SEC can enforce that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, sir. We very, very much appreciate
it. It's been a great pleasure, sir.